Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Female Voices in E-commerce podcast. My name is Chana, and I'm the founder of Owl & Monk, an e-commerce consultancy in Southern Sydney. I work one-on-one with business owners on their e-commerce strategy, website design, and development. Using the right online tools and systems, we make the lives of business owners easier and create personalized e-commerce solutions that help them to sell their products effectively online. I'm also the co-founder of the Shopify Women's Network, an online community designed to empower women to confidently use Shopify to grow their brands. This is a podcast for women looking to take their idea to the world and want the knowledge, inspiration, and connection to build a business that they love. Listen to our podcast series to hear the voices of female founders, entrepreneurs, and advocates who share their stories, experiences, and strategies on how to run a successful retail business. I hope you enjoy the show. So welcome, Rochelle, and thanks for being my guest today on the Female Voices of E-commerce podcast. How are you today?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
So I've known you for nearly a decade now.
Has it been that long?
It's been a while. So back in the day, you were actually working for the Australian Packaging Covenant organisation, which is a sustainable packaging not-for-profit, and now you've started your business, Race Chicks Motorsport.
Yes.
So congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about Race Chicks?
Yeah, for sure. So, totally different to working at ATCO. So Race Chicks is, our mission is to help increase female participation in motorsport. That's basically the why behind Race Chicks. And I do that through a few different initiatives, take a holistic approach to trying to increase female participation. So we've got Race Chicks apparel. We have an apparel line. We have events, a community. We have Race Chicks Motorsport. So we've got a karting team, and we have Race Chicks Race School as well. So there's five different initiatives that come under the Race Chicks banner.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting initiative, and this is why I wanted to talk to you, is like you're using e-commerce not just to sell products. Like your initiative is actually about educating women on how to drive, you know, their cars in a safe environment, but also giving them the confidence and support that they need to actually take their sport to another level.
The apparel line is there to support women in motorsport. Like, as we're the minority in this sport. Like, we're only about 10%. There's only about 10% female participation in motorsport. So there wasn't a nice lifestyle apparel range. Like, I was using, you know, myself an example of, you know, wanting to go to work, you know, on a safe Friday, like casual Friday at work. And if I wanted to wear something motorsport, like related, there was nothing nice that I could wear. So that's where that kind of line came from. And there's so many other women now that say, oh, thank you. And, yeah, there isn't anything. And also anything that has a full range of sizes as well. Like, so anything that generally you'll see from a manufacturer will only go to maybe like a 16 or 18. There isn't that full range. So that was, you know, one side of it. And there's a real big disconnect in terms of what you see on TV to how to get started in motorsport. And that's not just for women, like that's for the guys as well. We're not, like, it's not general knowledge of how to get started in motorsport. We all know how to get started, say, in footy or soccer or netball, because that's what we've grown up with and they're the popular sports in Australia. But with motorsport, unless you know somebody that's involved in the sport, so whether it's karting or cars or bikes, generally it's not general knowledge. Like, when I became a fan of motorsport, I don't know how I became a fan of motorsport, but I did in my 20s. I had absolutely no idea about grassroots level motorsport. I didn't know the world of car clubs existed. I didn't know that you could take your road registered car to the track. All I knew was what I saw on TV, and that was it. And there's so many other people like that out there. And then you add the female element to it, because generally your circle of friends, we won't know anyone amongst our girlfriends that are involved, where guys, you know, they're generally, you know, can be a bit more into cars. There's like thousands and thousands of women that are into cars. But I guess if you look at that traditional model, they're more likely, guys are more likely to know someone that's into cars or, you know, go to the track. So, yeah, so that's why it's just a bit harder, a bit more of a barrier for women to get involved in motorsport.
Do you think the barrier is related to confidence or it's just lack of knowledge or network?
I think it's a bit of everything. I think it's all those things. It's one that we're not, if we're not in that, if it's not in your world, then you don't know about it. Like if you're not, if the opportunity isn't there to start with, so there's that lack of knowledge. I think there's a lot of women that would want to do it, but they don't want to go and do it by themselves. Or I've even been told, oh, yeah, I've wanted to learn how to race, but I don't want my partner to teach me.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Or my husband to teach me.
Why do you think they say that?
I don't know. Maybe they just don't like how they are, like how their partner drives or something. I'm not too sure.
It's probably a shyness and a confidence thing. Like they don't want to look like an idiot in front of their partner.
100%, yeah.
And I think, you know, partners probably tell them the reality and they need somebody who's going to give them a little bit more of a soft kind of initiation into the sport, you know, somebody with a bit of patience and also the proper technical side of things. Because I think when men learn, they teach each other the tricks, but I think women are perfectionists as well and we like to kind of understand behind the scenes first, get the technique and the process right first before we actually apply ourselves.
And it's all about building confidence, and that's where we're different. The way that women and men approach things are totally different, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's just that's generally our nature, and I think it's acknowledging it, and then that's why I've created Race School, is because our approach as women is different. It's all about confidence with us. Like with men, they generally go from 0 to 120 and then go, oh crap, and then bring it back to 100. Whereas women will go from 0 to 70, 70 to 80, 80 to 85, 85 to 90. We get to 100, but we just do it differently. And it's all about confidence for us, and that's with anything.
So that's really interesting. So you're referring to the kilometres an hour increment.
Well, that's, as an example. But I even take my husband, he started mountain bike riding, and he's just, like, gone out and, like, just...
Flying down the hill.
And he's, still recovering 2 months later from, shoulder injury, like, had bark all off him. Like, he's just... And I just laughed at him. I can't stop laughing at him. And I said, it's just what you've done is exactly the same as, you know, what a lot of guys, how they approach to driving on the track. Like there was one guy that came out to start, this is a few years ago, and first lap, first corner, rolled the car.
Oh, wow.
Like, and it was because, like, there was just no caution with the approach. And one of the guys said, like, one of the driver trainers, he said, a woman would never do that.
Mm.
And that wasn't in a derogatory way. It was just the fact that we think about things differently. Like, can we think of consequences?
Yeah, cause and effect first.
And generally driver trainers love teaching women too, because we listen and we don't have the ego attached to it as well either. But even like the approach you were talking about, there was one guy and he was saying that he wanted to get his partner involved. He goes, oh, I'm going to take her to the track and I'm going to take her as a passenger. He goes, I'm going to scare her. Because she needs to be scared. And I said, No. And I said, oh, my God, please don't do that. That is the total wrong approach, because I knew his partner and she was already a very nervous person to start with. And I'm like, if you do that, she will never get in that car again.
So what was the outcome then?
I don't think he ever did it.
Okay, good. You say, please take my number.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So for us, it's one, the confidence.
Yeah.
Two, and it's having the support and not wanting to be in a situation where we're worried about asking what we think is a silly question and being judged for it. You know, once we're confident, we want to go play with the guys, but in that learning environment, we'd like the community aspect and knowing that there's other women that are in the same, part of their journey as them, and that they're not going to be judged and that they're in a safe space. So I don't allow spectators, because I think, you know, if people bring their partners or their friends, you know, that whole ethos of the culture that I'm trying to have in my courses is gone, because then there's 10 people watching. Mm. So, you know, then people aren't going to feel confident and relaxed.
Yeah, I think that's a really good approach. And I think that just gives people that comfort. They're in that safe environment. They know what to expect, and they can just be themselves and not feel like they have to perform either.
Yeah, that's it. Yep. And everyone goes at different pace. Even for beginners, that we learn differently. We learn at different paces. And then generally after the course, they're a bit more confident to go and play with the guys, and that's the idea behind it.
So through your courses, tell me, you bring your own car, how big is the class size?
Generally do no more than 12, so it's a smaller group, between about 12 to 4.
Is it over one day, multiple
days? Yeah, so the beginner course, it's half-day theory, actually. Both a beginner and intermediate courses are beginner, a half-day theory, half-day practical, and they're designed for them to bring their own car to the track so that they're gaining a lot more confidence in their own car. They're learning the capabilities and the capacity of their cars and themselves, because a lot of people don't know that you can bring your daily drive to the track and you can start competing in your own, daily drive or a registered car. A lot of people will get a track-dedicated car, so that they're not worried about, breaking their daily drive, that they can still go to work on Monday if they need to. But you don't need an actual race car or anything fast to get started in motorsport. Our first track car was a $1,200 Lancer that we bought off eBay. It wasn't anything fancy. We were building a house at the time, so we didn't have a lot of money. But we were out there having a go and learning a lot. You learn to drive you become a better driver when you learn to drive a slow car fast rather than learning to drive a fast car slow, because you have to, there's more technique involved. You're learning more to get, the maximum out of the car when you learn to drive a slow car.
But I think driving your own car is good as well, because you've already got a lot of skills around that vehicle. You know where your blind spots are, and you're really confident to a degree. So you are actually taking your road awareness and the performance to a different level, because you're understanding your own vehicle from a different perspective. And so I can imagine that gives people a different confidence after they're actually on the track and do the course to actually go on the road from their day to day.
Yeah, definitely. Even braking, one of the first exercises we do is braking. So many people haven't applied the brake really hard, an emergency brake in their car. And a lot of people are actually scared because they think, I'm going to spin out, or what's going to happen? And once they do it, they're like, oh, is that it?
Probably want to do it again that day.
Because, on the track, we do have to apply hard braking, especially, turn two at Sydney Motorsport Park. You're coming into a corner at, 170 kilometres an hour, and you have to then get the speed down very quickly to 60 kilometres an hour to get around the corner. So we're doing that kind of, I guess you could say an emergency brake, but on the track to slow the car down. And, so once they're confident in that, they can do their braking a lot later. It's going to get them around the track quicker.
But we've also had a lot of rain recently. So having that skill around braking and how to understand how to behave in wet conditions, I think, is an important skill for anyone to have regardless. And I think because of COVID, we haven't been driving as much either. Yes, we've been having a few weekenders or trips locally, but we're not in that day-to-day drive. We're not on the roads in, torrential rain conditions. And so people don't have the essential skills at a refined level. So is that something that you work on as well?
We look at we have exercises around understeer and oversteer, which definitely helps on the road as well and travelling. 100% that driving on a track like motorsport definitely makes you a better driver on the road, for sure. Even your vision and where you're supposed to be looking, seat position of a car, it's, we learn all of that. Even coming down to changing a tyre. I got a flat tire, last year. I was fine. I'm like, okay, I had that tire change in, under 10 minutes type thing, because that's what we do.
But changing a tire is something that every driver should know how to do. But I know that a lot of women don't know, or they don't feel comfortable. But also, usually your tire goes flat in an awkward situation, like when you're on the motorway or you're on a windy bend, or the visibility is not very good.
So and when you're dressed up in really nice clothes,
you've got high heels on, And so I can understand why there is a bit of hesitation.
Yeah.
But I think that is an invaluable skill for all women and men to actually have to drive a car. You know, regardless of age, you know, as soon as you get your P plates, you should know how to change that car.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank, you know, thank goodness it's something that you don't, well, most of us think, touch wood, that we don't have to do a lot of.
And that's the problem, is we can't practice. So I think people learn when they do courses, but yes, then they probably don't need to change that tire for 10 years.
Yeah,
the mechanic's right. done it or the husband's done
yes.
it, and then they've completely forgotten.
Mm.
But luckily we've got Google, so you can actually learn how to change a tire via YouTube.
Yeah. But even, you know, checking that there is air,
yes.
you know, well, for people that have a spare tire, a lot of cars.
They've got those funny little
space savers. And things. But, you know, knowing where the jack is and things like that.
Yeah.
In your car.
Yeah. So overall confidence is what you're teaching people to understand their own car, their own equipment,
yep.
as well as having the skills to actually go on the road and then have some fun afterwards as well.
Definitely.
Tell me about the type of people that actually come and do your courses and buy your products.
They're a range from... Well, we have competitors and then we have enthusiasts. And then there's the supporters of the competitors as well. So competitors, they're like a different product to, say, enthusiasts. You know, one thing that I have is that any competitor, whether it's, you know, cars or bikes, they don't want anything pink. So, you know, they say it's hard enough, or, you know, sometimes can be hard enough being a woman at the track. If you're the only one, the last thing they want is, you know, like, is anything pink. They said, you know, we don't need to draw, you know, highlight the fact that we're a woman at the track, which is hard for me because my favourite colour is hot pink. So, yeah, that makes it a bit hard. But then any enthusiasts, you know, like fans of supercars or Formula One, they always come and ask, oh, does that come in hot pink, or have you got that in hot pink? It's very weird, like watching young girls walk past and they're just drawn to pink. It's funny. They're just, yeah, drawn to it. Yeah, so.
I think that's really interesting that you said, like, the competitors, they don't want to stand out. So they're wanting to blend. They're wanting to be treated as everybody else. They're wanting special treatment. We're not the 10% of girls here in the room. Look at us in hot pink.
That's it. Yeah.
But then pink is such an important colour for people that as well, that they kind of want to actually align themselves. So I think for you as a brand, it's like you need to have your standard colours, like your blacks.
Yeah.
But then also have some highlight colours and feature colours like your pinks in your range as well.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And it's funny, like, when you look at nearly every other, like any other initiative that I look at for women in motorsport, generally they've all got hot pink in it. Yeah.
So tell me about the brand, because I know when you started the brand, you were quite specific of what you wanted and what you didn't want the brand to be perceived. And obviously pink is one of those colours, like you don't want to be that cliche kind of girly brand. Do you want to expand a little bit more on just the brand ethos and your approach with the design?
Yeah, so it was, I wanted the brand to, it needed to represent all motorsport genres. So which was quite difficult, you know, oh, let's start a brand that's going to represent all motorsport genres. So that includes cars, karts, bikes and boats. So that's all classified as motorsport. And encompass, like, and it for to be a national brand as well. So when I looked at all the different elements of motorsport, the one thing that every motorsport had in common was a helmet. So that's where we worked on that, yeah, wanted it to be feminine, but also, you know, wanted to represent all motorsport genres. So, yeah, so that's when we came up with the helmet with the hair. It was, yeah, just something very simple, which could be used, you know, in the digital space as well as I knew it had to be on embroidered, like on apparel as well. So, you know, we took that into consideration. So that it could be, you know, embroidered or screen printed. So, yeah, so that came into the element as well when it came to design. In terms of, I guess, like the brand personality was then, you know, we wanted it to be, you know, kind of like, I guess, kind of sassy in a way in terms of, you know, we're strong women, you know, when you think of like women, it's getting emotional there. You know, we're fierce, we're determined, we're we're persistent, and like, you know, we're not women that, you know, just going to sit in the corner, not wallflowers type thing. But then there's also the caring, the nurturing side of it as well. So, yeah, so we're kind of like, you know, we support and nurture everyone that comes through.
Well, yeah. I think you've done a brilliant job with it. And I think the brand itself, it's very welcoming. It has the educational element, supporting element, but it's also giving people the courage and confidence for something which has been so typically male-dominated. And I think with what you're doing, you are shaking up an industry, and it's come at a really important time where there is a lot more inclusion.
Yeah, and that was the thing. Like, I wanted to make sure that it was very inclusive. Like, motorsport is very political and it's very segmented, so it didn't matter what motorsport genre people were involved with. It didn't matter whether they're an official, just a fan, they're a competitor, they work in the industry, you know, they're either a mother or a wife or a girlfriend of a competitor. It's, you know, they're still involved in motorsport. Like, they're still part of the industry. The industry is huge. And when you come, you know, when you include all these different touch points, you know, that's the community that we need to support.
Yeah, and I think the motorsport industry is very lucky to have you playing this role. You know, you come from, you know, experience working with, you know, large organizations. So you have the know-how. You know, you understand brand and concept and marketing and understanding what things like target market mean. But because of your passion in motorsport, you're actually being the advocate for an industry that doesn't have a leader, that doesn't have the right representation. So what I see Race Chicks doing is actually empowering that industry, building that community, and giving the whole spectrum of women throughout the whole motorsport industry support and connection that they need.
Yeah, and motorsport in itself is quite aspirational. Like, a lot of people go, oh, I'd love to be a race car driver.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's something that maybe people see it as out of reach. You know, it could be perceived as being like glamorous, I guess, or, you know, having those skills, oh, I'd love to be able to drive a, you know, a nice car fast type thing, and to be able to do that. So, yeah, a lot of people actually aspire to do it, but they don't realise how easy it is to actually get out there and do it. So on one hand, you know, motorsport itself is aspirational, and then we're trying to inspire other people and other women to then come and do it and have a go.
That's so exciting. I remember, was it about 2 years ago, you took me on the track in your car? So to set the scene, Rochelle has this beautiful older Subaru. What year was it?
It's a
97. Oh, it's 97. So yeah. It's a lot older than I remember. So it's got these beautiful, like, silver with these bright pink headlights.
Yeah.
And you've called it Giggles.
Yep.
So, you know, I've arrived at this race, the racetrack down at Eastern Creek. I've never been on a racetrack in my life. We have a Subaru ourselves, so I understand how powerful the vehicle can be. You know, our car in particular has 6 gears, so it's actually a lot of fun to drive, especially when you're trying to go onto the motorway. So you're able to really accelerate very fast and get into that traffic when you need to, which is quite cool.
Same feeling as pit exit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I remember going on that track with you, and it was just a complete, like, so much stimuli, like the sound of all the cars and just how official. So when I arrived, just how professional, like, all the officials were, like, safety first. It was so much criteria and checkpoints to make sure that you're wearing the right gear. But then when you took me out in the car, I was so nervous. Like, I think my heart was, I don't know where it was, but it was beating so fast. We hadn't even started yet. And I was just like, well, I've known Rochelle for a long time. I trust her, but shit, you know, she's going to go really fast. But I felt safe with you. But gosh, we went fast. In my head, I remember it was something over 200. Do you know how fast you've been there on that track before?
Yeah, I think it was 206.
206K an hour. Yeah. So I've never been 206K an hour. But I remember when I finished, just I felt alive. I felt amazing. Yeah. And I just, this buzz inside me, like, I was almost ready to sign up then and there to learn how to drive, you know. And But then obviously the adrenaline wore off, and I think it gave me a new appreciation for the vehicle, and I felt very safe.
Oh, that's good.
So I think, you know, for somebody to spend the day with you doing the proper course in their own car, they would also be feeling equally as confident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They definitely leave with a big smile on their face and feeling a lot more empowered with their cars, which is great. But it's funny, when I did a segment for Studio 10, and Nerelda Jacobs came out to the track, and I took her on a couple of laps. And it was so funny, like, I just reversed up the main straight and she screamed. She's like, oh my God, even this is fast. Yeah. And I said, all right, I'm just going to do a couple of warm up laps to warm up the tyres. And it, like, on the first lap, she said, oh my God, is this slow? that was a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the race clothing itself and what the criteria is to actually get on the track.
Yeah, so it depends on the level that that you're competing in. It varies. It can go from, you know, not needing any safety equipment at all, like with a say events which we classify as non-speed events, which say Motokana, you can just come to the track, you're just needing clothes, shoes, and that's all you need, because you're not going at speed. Then, say, if you're doing a track day or super sprints, all you need is neck to wrist ankle non-flammable clothing. So you don't need a race suit. I have an apparel item called a track top, which is 100% non-flammable. So it's cotton. The screen printing is water-based, so it can meet that requirement. So you can just wear that in a pair of jeans. And then in closed shoes, and you need a helmet, which meets the Australian standards. So that level of racing is, you don't need an actual race suit. But then once you get into door-to-door racing, which is like supercars and things like that you see on TV, that is when you need to then have like a triple layer fire retardant suit to be able to get out. On the track, you need to make sure you have, woolen socks. You need to have proper socks. And even as women, we're supposed to wear like fire retardant underwear.
Yeah, okay.
As well, which, I mean, makes the poor sense. Guys, they don't go show us your bra or your undies or anything like that. So the higher you go up, up the ladder, so basically the faster you go, the apparel requirements increase, because it's all about fire safety. But then when, say, in karting, it's about abrasion resistance. So the suits are different to cars, so they're all about protecting your skin from, if it come off the cart, there's no structure around you protecting you from the abrasion of a track surface. So those suits are about abrasion resistance, and then they wear rib protectors as well, so if they do get hit on the side, that their ribs are protected, and then also a neck brace as well to support their heads.
It's just a reality check. Like, it's a dangerous sport, but like any sport's dangerous. You have all sorts of guards when you play different, like, ball sports regardless. So it just is an extension of that, but just at a larger scale.
Definitely. And then they just keep improving the safety requirements year on year. Unfortunately, sometimes it is because of an accident, and then, they'll improve them. But, that's, I think, with anything. Another big thing at the moment is the frontal head restraints. If you watch any motorsport on TV, you'll see them, and what it does, it protects your neck from being stretched. So in any accident, what happens is when you're harnessed into the seat, and say you hit a wall, the harness keeps you in the seat, but what happens is your neck then goes forward, and majority of all injuries, whether it's deaths or if somebody becomes paralyzed, It's because their neck has stretched. So what the neck restraint does, the frontal head restraint does, it stops the neck from keeping going forward once the body stops. It can also stop the side to side as well.
Wow, lucky we've got this modern technology to really protect us these days.
Yeah, and it's saving lives. even at club, you know, club level motorsport or grassroots level, the frontal head restraints, yeah, they're saving a lot of people from injury.
Well, because the reality is, if you're going to sport or to work, you should always come home in one piece, safe. Mm. There shouldn't be any real risk at the end of the day.
No, that's it. And that's one thing, you know, I say to people that come through the course is, you know, don't skimp on safety. You know, don't go and, you know, a lot of people, oh, okay, I'm going into motorsport, I need to go and get a race suit. Well, you don't need a race suit like when you're getting started. Spend the money on tyres. You know, that's more important than looking the part. Absolutely. So I think, yeah.
So with your apparel range, are you building in these safety, what do you call it, protection mechanisms within your garments themselves?
It's more so the ones that are designed for the competitor is making sure that they meet those fire retardant requirements, that they're 100% cotton, that they're non-flammable, it's only water-based things that are used, and then the more, you know, lifestyle apparel range that isn't designed to be worn as by the competitor, then yeah, no, they're not. But the racewear line, is definitely.
So it really goes back to who your customer type is. So you've got your enthusiasts, they're in a bit more casual type of clothing that doesn't need the fire resistance and abrasion protection. And then you've got your actual competitors, which is a different style of garment altogether.
Yeah.
So tell me, for somebody getting started in motorsport, how expensive can it be? Because it can be perceived as quite an expensive sport.
Yeah, so it is a sport that you can spend as little or as much money as you want. But, yes, if you want to win and if you want to go faster, then it does cost more money. So, as I said, our first car was $1,200 that we bought off eBay. We spent $1,000 on tyres.
Wow.
and then as we had money, then we did upgrades. We upgraded the brakes, we upgraded suspension. You know, we put a roll cage in the car. So, you know, there are motorsport genres like motor carnas that I said, where you don't need any of that safety gear. Those entry fees are generally under $100, around the $100 mark. There, you know, that's a very economical and cheap form of motorsport to get into. And kids can do it as young as 12. They can compete in that type of motorsport. And just the car skills that they learn is amazing, you know, the car control skills that you learn doing motor carnas. Then the next one up from that is, say, hill climb. So, again, entry fees are only around $100 to $150 mark, but they are classified as a speed event, so you do need the fire protection, you know, the apparel. So, again, you can still do that in a road registered car. You don't need the, you know, semi-slick tyres. You can use your normal tyres. So, again, that's not necessarily like it. You don't need to spend a lot of money to get involved in that. But then, say, when you start doing like super sprints, what I do, and it depends on the tyres that you use, if you, say, going for a club championship, which I did, I was, you know, using quite expensive tyres, but if you're just out there to have fun, you don't need, you can spend half as much money on tyres. So, the faster you go, the more you spend money. And even with, I did want to go faster, so we had the Lancer, and I'm like, no, I want to go faster now. So I bought Giggles, and it's five times as expensive. You know, I'm so much quicker, but yes, the repair bills I'm definitely spending a lot more money.
We've got a local business that specifically services Subarus. And he's got himself on such a beautiful niche because they're so specific on those vehicles. Mm. But every time we go there, $1,000.
Oh, yeah.
$1,500. To the point where I just don't want to drive it because we don't want to get repaired anymore.
Yeah. So, obviously, the higher you go up the ladder, the more expensive it is. You know, there's people are spending $100,000 a year on cars. Even karting, the people that are, you know, competing in the Australian Championship Series, they're the ones that want their kids, you know, to be the next Daniel Ricciardo. They can be spending $100,000 a year, just like that's on a kart. That's not even a car.
Wow.
So it can be, it can be really expensive. So
do you think the finance is a barrier to entry for a lot of women? Yeah.
Yep.
More so than men, or is, can't tell the difference.
I think as women, they, especially mums, they tend to put themselves last. Mm. Like they'll spend the money on the kids first. So I have a lot of women coming through the courses now. They're like, oh, kids are all grown up now. I can now spend money.
Their turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you get a range of women actually doing the courses, don't you?
Definitely.
Like different age groups.
Yeah, from 17 to 74.
74?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about the 74-year-old lady.
Yeah, she'd she'd been involved in cars, but she hadn't actually driven herself. Her husband, they've been quite involved, but she'd never actually done it herself. So it was kind of like a bucket list item. So her husband had passed away and she still wanted to do it. She was very young, 74-year-old. She was like, oh. And she came in a Kona. I think it was a Hyundai Kona. She was like, oh, this car isn't fun. I shouldn't have sold my old car. She was trying to, you know, get it sideways.
Oh, okay. She was trying to drift, was she?
Yeah. So, and even have women, you know, in their 60s, like, she goes, oh, probably the oldest person here. And I'm like, no.
No.
There is no age barrier. And with cars, it's not as physical as karting. Karting is very physical. But just even to do a track day, age doesn't matter.
But if you're 74, you've been driving for 50 years, so you've got some good experience.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, realistically, and you've probably got a bit of budget behind you too. So I imagine, you know, those people, if they really are interested, that could be a great medium for them to explore and to have some fun with.
Yeah. And this is the kind of like the aspirational bit that I was talking about is, you know, this is something they've always wanted to do. So now that they're, you know, that they are older and that now more women are getting involved and they can see that there's a community, they're like, okay, I'm going to do it now. Like there was one lady in my last course that she said dad wouldn't let me drive, like her brother competed, he would never let her.
How interesting.
Yeah, compete. And then I had another lady, she said she was told as a young girl that
women don't race.
Wow. Yeah.
So yeah, it's an era thing, I think. Perception's changing in this modern day that we're in. There's a bit more of an acceptance of women can do things that men can do.
Yeah, that's it.
And did these women come back again and again, or that they just come for the one day?
No, they're doing track days.
So they're part of their lifestyle now.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. And it's good. And especially the ones that are, where they've said, you know, their kids are grown now, that they can do it, that they've got the budget. A couple of them now bought track cars.
It's interesting because it's older demographic that I think a lot of online businesses don't actually put enough budget and time into understanding, and it is that kind of retiree age bracket. And the reality is that age bracket, they've run their careers, you know, they've grown up their children, they've got budget behind them, they own their own home, some are widowed or divorced, so they actually have a lot more disposable income. And quite often they report, you know, when they go to a retail space in particular, that they're ignored. They're invisible. But realistically, these people, they can buy for themselves. They've got children. They've got grandchildren.
Mm.
They have money to spare. They want to actually live their life and enjoy that money. Mm-hmm. So if you can give them something that they love and want to be a part of, like, they've got the budget behind it.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think whether it's, you know, say something like motorsport or anything, you know, it could be, you know, women in trades and things like that, the more women that we get involved and the more that the, you know, kids and grandkids see the women now doing it, that's going to change those younger generations, because then they're going to know, oh, yeah, my grandma did that, or, you know, my mum did that. It's, you know, oh, yeah, my grandma was an engineer or she was a mechanic. It's going to become their norm. It's going to change it. So I think we're, you know, anything where women are a minority, you know, we're going to see that changing the more women that do it now, because, you know, if you don't see it, you can't be it type thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I think Dylan Alcott has said it a few times when he's spoken at different events, like, you know, when he grew up with his disability, he never realised that, you know, people in wheelchairs could have relationships, who could get married, who could have a family, who could be competitive in their sports and actually have the opportunities with a proper job. Like, his perception, because he'd never met anyone in his position, was that never existed. You just were on your own, isolated, and didn't have the opportunities. So I think by you providing role models like yourself and having these other women being advocates and, you know, sharing their experience, like other women and girls are actually seeing that and wanting to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And they're not as possible. So they have the networks and the confidence to do so.
Yeah, definitely. They're having that support network is massive.
Hmm.
And I think a lot of people don't realise how important community
is. What's it look like from a global perspective? Is it quite similar to what you're experiencing here in Australia with the take-up of women in the motorsport industry?
Well, motorsport isn't, like, if you compare motorsport to other sports, it's not as popular. So if you take that into consideration, you know, plus then we're only about 10%, it's probably less in Europe. Motorsport's a lot more popular, and then in America it's a lot more popular with NASCAR and Speedway and things like that. But still, but everywhere, globally, there's more women getting involved in all areas, not just as drivers, but as engineers and mechanics. And but it's generally the drivers that get profiled because that's what people see. So they've developed the W Series, which is a fully funded, it's a Formula E series, just of with all women drivers. So whereas women, they don't want to compete in just a all female series, it's really important in terms of getting their names out there and profiling these women that, yes, like there are, you know, there's a whole series of female races out there, so it's actually, you know, really good presence to have. And that's a really important series, and that actually follows around the Formula One to different European countries. So it's not coming here, unfortunately.
What a
shame. Yeah, I know, too much to ship all the cars over down here. But generally across the board, yeah, there's definitely a lot more women getting involved.
Mm. So tell me about your strategy, because obviously to grow Race Chicks as a brand and as a movement, like you've got a very niche market which is quite small. So I kind of see this as a strategy and also a challenge for you. So what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, massive challenge. Whose idea was this?
Well, they always say niching is great, but you're like niche in a niche.
Yeah, that's right. I think, yeah, and that's why I do a lot of advocacy work as well. In terms of helping to just break down the barriers and just educate people in general, because the more people in motorsport, it's better for the industry and just better for business in general. Part of that strategy is definitely the advocacy just trying to educate people that how easy it is or how easy it can be to get started in motorsport and help support the industry in general. So, and still, you know, I'm in year three now of Race Chicks, but I kind of feel it's year 2A because we couldn't do much at all last year, as much as try to do, you know, a lot more online. You know, the basis of Race Chicks is about connections and, you know, building relationships and community, which, you know, it is hard. Harder to do that online, I feel, but it's also important because Race Chicks is national, so it's...
How to be inclusive with everybody at one
exactly.
time.
Exactly, yeah. It's still very much in the brand awareness stage. Like, there's still so many people that, don't know about Race Chicks. So it's still getting out there, you know, trying to get our name out there that, you know, one, that we're here as a community, two, that we've got these courses available, and three, that did you know you can bring your car to the track? Like, you know, your daily drive to the track and how easy it is to get involved. And then the apparel line is there to support all of that. Is to bring all of that together so that, you know, once they are involved, and even like it's supporting the women that are involved. It's not just bringing new people in. It's important to support the women that are already involved. We do have some nice apparel that so that you can, you know, showcase that you are a race chick.
Now, your apparel is quite playful with what you've got printed. So I've got a couple of messages here. So some of your apparel says, the faster you go, the faster you spend your money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not speeding, I'm qualifying.
Yeah, that is our most popular. Yeah.
More throttle, less brake.
Yeah.
Want to expand on that one?
Jack Brabham said that.
Now, who's Jack Brabham?
Jack Brabham. Oh, he's a very famous Australian driver. He was a Formula One driver in Australia. And, yeah, so that was his explanation, very easy statement. You know, that's how easy it is to go faster, just more throttle, less brake.
Like, so for those that don't race, so obviously taking your foot off the brake, you need more power, right?
Yeah. So more acceleration, less brake.
Well, yeah, it's obvious, right?
Yeah, exactly. How hard is it?
Yeah, so
that's how you win races.
Okay, then we've also got easily distracted by race cars.
Yes, and that's me, definitely. Even at Bathurst, I had a stand there and there was a screen behind the stand and I was standing there watching the race and this guy came up and he had to actually say, excuse me, because I was too busy watching the race cars instead of...
Yeah, priorities, I think, is important.
Yeah.
Now for kids, I like this one. So when I grow up, I want to be a princess. I want to be a race chick.
That's it. Yeah. So crossed out princess and I want to be a race chick.
But I think that one's great because it's aspirational and based on, you know, kids seeing their mothers or other women in motorsport, it is something that they can actually aspire to and have some fun with. You know, they might not choose to do netball. They might want to actually race, you know, because not all kids are the same. So there might be more of that interest.
Definitely. Like there was a young girl mother that told me a story. Her young daughter came home from preschool and she was really upset because she got picked on by a boy in preschool because she was she wore I think it was she had cars like a Lightning McQueen jumper and she had two items of clothing on that were motorsport related and this young boy said to her, you can't wear that, you're a girl.
That's terrible, isn't it?
And that was in preschool. And so she came home really upset and like her mom said, No, that's okay. You can do that. So I had Drive Like a Girl T-shirts then, and so I just sent her one and I put this little note. I said, you but keep on being a little race chick, you know. Don't you worry about, don't you listen to that boy. You just be what you want to be. So now she wears that whenever she mom takes her karting or to the speedway.
That's just amazing that. That mentality starts from such a young age.
Yes.
Like, how are we going to influence change if there's already that kind of communications at a three-year-old level, four-year level?
It seems to be ingrained. And where there's some great program, or there's a great program called Girls on Track that they take to schools. But I think it needs to start in preschool. Mm. Even if there's a really good video to watch, a really good ad to watch, Mattel brought it out. Mattel partnered with, I think it was Mercedes, and they interviewed these young girls, and they said, oh, so there was dolls and cars, and they were saying, you know, which toy do you like? And they're like, oh yeah, I'm going to play with the doll. They said, what about the cars? And they're like, no, I think a boy. No, the boys play with cars. Then they showed him this video of a lady racing a car, and their little faces light up.
Oh wow!
And it was like, can we do that? Highly recommend looking at watching that video. And then you're just like, wow, it's just ingrained.
So I guess it's every interaction. So even probably caregivers not doing it on purpose, like say preschool, they're probably going, okay, you know, give the girls the dolls and give the boys the cars. They're not saying specifically girl, boy, but it's just what people have been accustomed to that, oh, yeah, girls like that and boys like cars. Like it's just how we've all kind of been brought up.
Yeah. And we're generally too brought up with being told, be careful. You know, be careful, be careful, be careful, be careful.
And boys?
Go run up that tree.
Yeah, just don't break anything.
Don't kill yourself. Don't come to me unless you're bleeding. Yeah. You know, type thing.
How interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we have to start from the beginning.
Yeah.
And the last thing for the kids is, I don't chase boys, I pass them.
That's it.
Oh, that one's really cool. Yeah. So going back to the strategy, I know you mentioned, which is very exciting, you're actually going to have a stand at the Formula One this year.
Yes.
Why is that important for you to actually be there?
Brand awareness is the biggest one. It's the biggest motorsport event in Australia. It's a different audience. Again, letting people know that come and bring your daily drive to the track and it's easy. We can get you started in motorsport. You're here, obviously, because you love motorsport. But then, yeah, you can get involved. So, and we've got a community of women here. We know we've, you know, there's over 800 of us now in the community. Mm-hmm. So,
it's growing.
And that's, yeah, it is growing. It's, yeah, so there's more of us out there than you think, but it's, yeah, having that support network is really available. Like one of the girls, she, you know, she posted in, and she said, oh, has anyone, like those frontal head restraints that I was talking about earlier, she goes, does anyone else get bruised boobs from these? Like, where else could she ask that question?
That's true. Like you, some women would be comfortable, but generally most wouldn't. They would rather just talk to another woman about that in the appropriate context.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
So your role as having a stand is answer those awkward questions.
It's mainly the brand awareness that, yes, we're here. And 3 years ago when I first started, I wouldn't have thought that this was possible. I wouldn't have thought that we were, you know, big enough or fancy enough or, you know, have the apparel range that I could have a stand. But here we are.
Congratulations. And it's going to be a lot of people at Formula One. How many people did they expect?
Oh, I'm not too sure, but apparently Sunday tickets are sold out. So for people that would think, that I would think that you could just turn up on the day and buy a ticket at the gate, apparently sold out on the Sunday on the main race.
That's amazing.
So it's, yeah, so hopefully there's, yeah, a lot of people.
There'll be a lot of people there, but you'll have, you know, you'll have women who are interested, women that probably didn't know they were interested because they're supporting their husbands or just going, you know, for their kids or general interests, but then actually realizing, hey, I do actually have something in common here. I have been curious for some time. I never knew this existed.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, that's one of our, that's, you know, one of our target audiences are those enthusiasts. And that's why, as much as like the, you know, like the e-commerce side, is so important for getting that national reach. It's, you know, at these events is where our is attending. So as long as, you know, people still come out and watch attend these events in person, which TV coverage is so good that a lot of people just tend to watch at home. But it's a bit like going to an AFL game or a soccer game. I think there's nothing like that in the environment of attending events.
I think also after having, you know, all this isolation as well, I think people are craving to be at events again, like that collective energy. And, like, even when you watch, like, the Olympics, just the performance of somebody is improved or changed, influenced in some way because of the spectator. The spectator just plays such an important role at these sports. So it kind of, they work in harmony with each other, the performer or the athlete plus the actual spectator themselves. So
Yeah. But as much as I'd love to get to all the rounds, it's, you know, it's too hard to try and get to Perth or up to Darwin or Tassie. It's, you know, like it's not possible.
So you're doing the event Victoria or Sydney?
Kind of doing the East Coast at this stage. So Gold Coast, Winton, Sandown, like Formula One. But definitely still need to have that national reach.
Definitely, because you run courses New South Wales and Victoria.
Yeah, and going to Queensland in April.
Oh, so and then Australia.
Yeah, and then plan to do South Australia as well later in the year.
Mm. Yeah. And then we didn't speak about it, but you actually run events as well, so through COVID, you did a couple of online offerings, but before that, you were doing in-person events.
Yeah, so we're doing networking events where there's no guest speakers or anything. It's just all about just women coming to connect with like-minded women. That's pretty much what the events are about. Is a race chicks meeting race chicks.
Yeah. But those events are really important because women can connect with other women in the same space, and so they become inspired. They want to attend events. They've got somebody to ask questions about, you know, like it's building that community in a like-minded.
Yeah, absolutely, because there's a few of us out there, myself included. I had no friends that were involved in motorsport. So if, you know, these kind of things were around, you know, maybe I would have got started earlier. And some of the girls have now, like, they're now friends. They'll, you know, meet up on a Friday for, you know, for a drink. Or, you know, even one of the girls in, a couple of the girls in Queensland, they've met and now they're driver and co-driver, like navigator and driver.
That's amazing. So yeah. Train their own team. Right? Yeah. The community that you built.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, it's just so important to have those connections. And they'll even say, oh, you know, I'm going to this event. Is anyone else going? And, yeah, so they're
carpooling, they're spending the day together, they're going somewhere yeah. they probably typically wouldn't go because it's too far or they just didn't want to go alone.
Didn't want to go alone. Yeah. That's generally, yeah.
So maybe what we'll talk about now is just a couple of the challenges you've had, Rochelle.
Mm. Yeah, so I think, well, I think with every business it was COVID. It's been a massive one. The other one was starting an e-commerce business. No e-commerce experience. Like, whose idea was that? So, you know, I came from, we, you know, briefly talked about APCO, came from my background was events, operations, you know, office management. Give me a systems or process. So, you know, I was all down with that. I built the website. I knew the vision that I had and I could build a website. And then I got to the point where I was like, now I have to sell this stuff. So that was, yeah, so that was a challenge. You know, I was, you know, in terms of, you know, a service in have running events and even marketing events and the human element, you know, or a service offering, I was fine with that. That wasn't a problem, and I had experience in that. But when it came to selling product, that's a different ball game.
But I think altogether. There's a couple of challenges within that because one, you've never designed products before, no. So you have to learn about manufacturing and mm-hmm. find a supplier. And you've actually found a local supplier yes. that's not too far from you.
Mm.
Why was that important to work with somebody local?
I think it's important, one, from a relationship perspective. And I see, you know, suppliers, they're an extension of your business. Mm. You know, without them, you basically don't have a business. And if there's a problem, well, they're the ones that are going to help you fix it because they're the ones that are supplying the product. So, you know, for me, it's important to have a face-to-face and a relationship, with my suppliers in that regard. So, yeah, so local supplier, and they're really good. They're only a small production, but the service is there. They're fantastic. So,
yeah, and I think anyone who's manufacturing products, whether or not it's locally or internationally, the more you can get to know that business and know them on a personal level, they are your team, the better you'll work together as a team and the more reliable and accessible they become. So,
yeah, definitely. I didn't want suppliers where they didn't know me in terms of I was just an account. Having that relationship, I thought that was really important.
And they are an extension of your team. So, you know, without them, you don't have product.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And then from your other challenge, you were saying actually starting to sell online was a challenge. Yeah. You know, that's a whole different business model when you look at it. So
it is.
Different strategies yes. involved, a different way of communicating with your customers out there, as well as you've got this physical product and you've actually got to represent it in a way that, you know, it can be found on Google. Like you have the right content and keywords. So there's a lot involved with actually getting online for that first time.
Yeah, definitely. And I found myself really out of my comfort zone there. But that's a good thing, I guess.
Well, you're not going to learn without doing it.
No, that's it. So that was, a big learning curve. But I'm so glad I registered the trademark. So Racechicks is a registered brand. So that's in terms of the graphic as well as the words. Mm. Racechicks, because I had somebody try to steal Racechicks Race School and register it. No other reason. I think they were just being nasty so that I couldn't register it. So I think they were expecting for Racechicks Race School to run as like under its own business name, but I just ran it all just under Racechicks Motorsport.
Mm.
So it didn't affect me that way. But I think if I hadn't have registered, like trademarked the name, then I could have been in a lot of, like, I would have had a lot of problems.
It's such an interesting story to hear, because obviously this person who was trying to compete against you and actually take ownership of it saw what you're doing as quite important and as having something that's got legs that potentially they want to actually steal your customer base and take away that integrity and hard work that you've done. So by trademarking, like registering the trademark, you are actually protecting yourself as a business model for the long term. It shows your level of commitment to actually build a type of brand that you're proud of, that you want to actually have succeed as well. And I think it gives you a lot more control as a business owner to actually have that protection in place.
Yeah, definitely.
But when you're a small business, like to trademark something, I imagine it's quite expensive and labor intensive. Like, did you feel upfront that that was a good investment choice? And or did it take a bit of time for you to kind of think to yourself, oh, is that really important? I guess it's like having the safety gear when you're racing. You know?
Yeah, it is. No, I just saw, as you said, it's an investment in the brand that, and I think I knew that I was, and I started a business, so I was onto something. Yeah, it was expensive. It was tough, definitely financially. But I engaged a trademark attorney. So in terms of labor intensive, I knew that it was out of my realm of knowledge. I thought I'm not even going to try and and navigate that world myself. So yeah, so I met with them, and they did all the hard work for me. So it was actually, from my perspective, it was easy. And they were the ones that suggested just trademarking the name Race Chicks. So then I could add other elements to it, and no matter what I added to it,
it was always going to be
it was always going to be protected. So I did. So I do recommend anyone out there that's listening to, if you believe in what you're doing, definitely trademark your business, your name, and if you've got a logo that. Yeah, that you think other people could do something similar, definitely trademark it.
I think that's really good advice. And I think just legals in general is really important for all businesses to invest in getting professional help through a legal expert, just because each business is so uniquely different and you need to be able to protect yourself. So it's better to pay up front and do things right to prevent an incident from happening, because generally it happens against bigger businesses that have bigger budgets. And that will ruin you as a business. So you want to have all your systems set up correctly from a legal perspective up front. There are templates out there, and that's okay to a degree, but I always think that you should talk to a legal expert first. Because templates are very general. They're quite often, you know, based on like an American or a Canadian model, depending on where you're actually sourcing them from. So you need to be complying to Australian legal and making sure you have everything covered from your terms and conditions, shipping, returns, and then your trademarking as well.
Yeah, so I'm definitely glad. And that was a challenge.
That would have been
one a challenge that I wasn't expecting.
Well, it's not, I mean, it's common, but not that common. You hear about it happening with a lot of bigger business, but generally in the small business space, people don't talk about it very often. I think this is where it goes back to having a good network and community, because I think once you've got a business network, you might tell somebody about the trademark and then I'll say, oh, that happened to me, or that happened to my friend's business, and you realize people coming out of the woodwork that it is quite common. But when you're a small business starting up, like, you don't realize you need a budget for your legals. So that having this issue with a competitor coming in directly, that would have been very stressful for you. Like, how did you manage that time, not kind of get, you know, overwhelmed or stressed or angry about the situation?
Well, I did all of that. But that was about a day. And then just what I had to do is, because I knew this person, which probably made it worse, I just found I had to disconnect from them totally. So, like, we're connected on, you know, on all social channels. And I just had to disconnect myself from it, because what I found I was doing was then I was reacting and making business decisions based on what they were doing.
But no, it was right by you.
Yeah. So instead of treading my own path, I was just reacting to them and counteracting what they were doing. So I just had to, which that's not healthy. That's not good business. So I just had to, you know, stop, pretend they don't exist. They can go their way. I'm going to continue what I'm doing. They're obviously, because then they copied something that I did anyway. So I just found, you know, they obviously think that I'm doing the right thing because they're copying what I'm doing. So I'm just going to continue what I'm doing, and I just have to forget that they exist and just continue on my path.
But the reality, regardless what kind of business or product you're producing out there, you're always going to have a competitor in some way. So I think you've got to be strategic and just keep one step ahead and always just thinking, well, what are my value systems? What's important to me? What are the non-negotiables? And then keep on that path.
And that's what I just had to get back to, like get back to my plan of what I was, because that's, my energy was being taken away. Focus back on what the original plan was.
Because building a business, especially a small business when it's your own, like it takes a lot out of you, like from an emotional level as well. So to really be selective of where you're putting your energy is quite important. And energy can take the form of your emotions, your strategy, your physical body. Like you really need to make sure that your energy is in the right place. And I think by you actually protecting your business with a trademark and not putting the energy into this competitor meant that you could be in a better place for actually making the decisions to do what you needed to do with your business.
That's right.
Wow, what a bumpy start. So you've had, you've launched the brand, then we've had the COVID lockdowns. You know, you can't actually have in-person events because, you know, physically we're not allowed to meet together.
Couldn't go interstate.
Couldn't go interstate, nor could you run a physical, you know, motorsport course, which is reliant on a race course and in person. And then you've had, you know, this competitor come in that's potentially causing challenges for your business from a naming dispute. What else could go wrong?
Please don't ask.
No, I think you'll be fine. It's just it's teething problems. You're building a business. You're finding your way. You've had a couple of, you know, challenges to begin with, but.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be fine. You've survived this long.
So. Yeah, that's it.
So tell me, what does the next 12 months look like for you?
Hopefully just some consistency in terms of everything remaining open. That's basically, you know, what the plan is. And actually planning. Last year I just stopped planning because it was like, you know, what's the point? Type thing.
It was a bumpy year. It was kind of like, let's just plan to get to tomorrow.
So the plan is to expand into Queensland and South Australia.
So when you say expanding, you're wanting to do more run courses
and networking events, in those states. And just expand our presence there. So going back to Victoria, so I did one event in Victoria last year. And then going back to Victoria in June. So, just expanding and, it's so easy for, you know, for us to be Sydney focused because that's where I am and that's where, you know, my immediate motorsport friends are. But, I really need to focus on the other states and share the love because that for me is important because there's nothing like it in other states. So it's important to get out there and expand and get some reach.
I think that's really good advice for the year coming ahead for everyone is just to plan ahead and to really kind of look at the calendar events of what's happening for your business and what's important and just keeping with that strategy of, you know, the brand awareness and getting your courses out there across the states.
Like so this, I don't know whether you've seen, so I've got my calendar on the wall there. Well, I couldn't do that last year. It's because, you know, I started it and then everything just got pushed and pushed and pushed. Couldn't plan out, you know, where I was going to be. Now I've got the years planned.
That's good. Awesome.
Yeah, and even the apparel as well. You know, planning different items for different times of the year as well and doing some design in that regard.
Well, that's exciting because I guess you can look at the like industry events but also the seasons too. So obviously winter coming up you might have like a warmer range and summer you'll have the singlets and things. So
the plan there. I'm waiting for I like the cooler months. Bring out some
we got the hoodies and you got the beanies. You can have all those kind of fun extra layers to kind of work with.
I've got one coming. It's a nice it's a lightweight long sleeve hoodie. It's so comfortable. Can't wait for it.
But those are things that people can wear off the track. They wear 100%. Around their houses, you know, they're going out. You know, that's just getting the Race Chicks brand out there a lot more, which is great.
Definitely.
So tell me, with your experience of working for the Australian Packaging Covenant, how has that influenced you as a small business, whether or not it's, you know, practices or just understanding the environment, your packaging, those sorts of things?
Oh, I definitely know. you definitely know what's sustainable and what isn't. Sustainable and just reducing the packaging as much as possible. And like nothing frustrates me more when, you know, I receive goods and it's a, you know, it's a small item in a big box type thing. It's, you know, it's using fit for purpose packaging is the biggest thing, and just not creating unnecessary waste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's influencing race chicks.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, for sure. That's about, I mean, motorsport isn't that sustainable.
Oh, true too.
Yeah, but definitely there's moves. You know, there's a lot of tracks. You know, Sydney Motorsport Park, which I'm on the board of ARDC, which runs Sydney Motorsport Park, and sustainabilism, you know, like a really big focus of ours this year. It's been there the last few years, but it hasn't been, you know, a core focus in a lot of the decisions that we've been making. But it's, yeah, a lot bigger focus this year.
Can you tell us just a little bit more about APCO in general?
Yeah, so the idea behind that is that so any brand over that has a turnover of $5 million or more to meet their government regulations, they need to be a member of APCO or something equivalent. Now, something program equivalent doesn't really exist, like that's reporting directly to the EPAs, but the EPAs don't they don't like that and prefer brand owners to be members of APCO.
What's EPA?
Environmental Protection Agency.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So each state is based. Yeah, each state has a different EPA. So with APCO, it's all about brand owners making their packaging as sustainable as possible. So it's either, you know, there's a focus on how products are designed, like that's where it starts, so that they're either designed for recovery or they're designed for reuse, like that's really where, like, sustainable packaging starts in its design. It's, you know, no point getting to the end and then the consumer has to go, well, what do I do with this? Now I have to put that in the bin because it wasn't designed for recovery. So, yeah, so APCO works with brand owners to make packaging either as, you know, recyclable or, you know, compostable and reusable as much as possible. So
there's quite a few, like, prominent Australian brands as well.
All your major big brands. So Kellogg's, Coca-Cola, Nestle, Unilever, all the big brands are all members of APCO.
But I think it's really important because I think for us to make change and to really reduce the packaging and to use more sustainable materials that can be reused, you need the bigger businesses who've got the funding and capacity to lead the way.
Yeah,
so like we were saying with Race Chicks, you need, you know, influence to be, you know, actively doing something and putting it out there to give others the confidence to do it too.
Yeah, well, you know, Woolworths, Coles and Aldi, they're part of it as well. They're major players because that's where we all go to purchase our products. And so there's even like the Australasian Recycling Label, the ARL now, which APCO's involved with. It's so that when, you know, people get to time to disposing of their rubbish or their waste, they can look at the packaging and it tells them, okay, put that in the bin, put that in the recycling bin, or, you know, it's a soft plastic, you can take it back to the store for it to be recycled. So there's the education space that they work with, Planet Ark, with that as well. So, yeah, so there's a lot of big players involved there. But and what they're working towards now is the 2025 national packaging targets. So by 2025, it was like 100% of packaging to be compostable, recyclable, reusable. By 2025, I think it's 70% of plastics to be, God, I'm really stretching my brain now, 70% of plastics, I think it is, to be recovered. So there's different targets which they're now working with, and that's like a federal government, I guess you could say, like, sanction that they're trying to get all businesses to try and meet.
And then from a small business sense, how can, like, small to medium-sized businesses get involved in trying to be more mindful with how they're packaging and producing their products?
Well, you know, you can look at, if you say you look at the waste hierarchy, it comes down to, well, first of all, like, reduce what you're using to start with.
Or, in general,
you
know, just half it.
Yeah. Don't buy it in the first place, you know, type thing. So it's all about, you know, reducing anything you know, reuse items where you can, buy recycled content or buy products. You know, every business could implement a policy where everything they buy has recycled content. Like that would be quite easy to do, like from paper to plastics, even like a stapler, you know, type thing. You can easily buy products that have recycled content in
them. Yeah, so from an operational perspective, the businesses can buy something that's going to help them with their role, being mindful of that, as well as what they're producing and the end product that's being sent to the customer.
Yeah. But also it needs to be ingrained in their day-to-day businesses. It can't be sustainability, can't be an add-on.
Mm. Or just I think I should have it. I'll just put it on there because it makes me look good.
That's it. Yeah. Consumers see right through that now. And even, you know, the younger generations, they're looking for businesses that where sustainability is part of their business ethos. Mm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it needs to be. It's not a marketing tool. It needs to be ingrained in their day-to-day processes.
And that's why I like following the B Corporation certification as well, because there's a certain level of compliance you have to meet to be accredited to be part of that program, and that falls under, you know, the ethics, the sustainability, your production. There's a whole gamut of different questions and things you've got to adhere to, and so that accountability is part of your normal daily strategy.
Okay. Businesses, we need to do something now in terms of, you know, climate change and
the floods, the fires, they're all not so friendly reminders that we've got to make some changes and we've got to do it now.
Yeah. And waste is something that everyone can it's an easy one. It's low hanging fruit. And consumers have power.
Yeah.
We're the ones purchasing the products.
Mm-hmm.
We make the choice. Like, yeah. Some people think, oh, but I'm only one person. But no, you have the purchasing power.
Yep, and then you do that by how many people in Australia all make the same decision. That's going to make a huge impact.
Massively.
Probably 28 million or so.
Purchase products that align with your values. Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Just briefly, I want to talk to you about tech. Tell me, what's your favourite go-to piece of technology at the moment for the business?
Oh, Xero.
Xero?
Yeah. that's been a really big game changer for me. It's just...
How are you running the business through that? Are you doing your inventory as well?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yep, yep. So everything. Or inventory through Square, but it's all linked. I was spending so much time because I do my own bookkeeping. I was just spending so much time doing, like, the reconciliations because I was using PayPal as well as, you know, a business account. PayPal. And to try and, like, reconciling the purchases, or, you know, sales through PayPal, and then when it was, you know, brought into the main business account and things, it was just like, there's an easier way to do this. So, yeah, so I set up, so it all linked through WooCommerce. So I had, you know, had to set up all my SKUs and things, but I've only got to do that once. And now all I do is just, so now in the habit every morning, so all my bank feeds come in. So gone are the days of having to wait for a bank statement and doing it. It's now a day or two. Like it's in time data basically. Yeah. And now all I have to do is click a button. Okay. Like it's reconciling.
Which is wonderful because, I mean, you have so many different things to do as part of your business. So to be able to automate as much of that seamlessly through the technology, it's saving you time.
Yeah.
Also saves human error.
That's it.
And getting all your SKUs in place is something all business should do regardless because it gives you control from, you know, your bookkeeping, but also your inventory management so you never run out of stock.
Yep.
Plus it gives you good metrics. So once you want to do your marketing, you understand what's your top sellers.
That's
you're able to expand your range and make more better strategic decisions.
Yeah. And then I also implemented Square as well, which I use at the face-to-face events because that was the other thing too. I'm like, you know, I've got one system for face-to-face events and then another system for like my e-commerce store. But I didn't have the data, so I wasn't capturing, you know, what was happening on site at the stand. So I'm like, nah, again, it's not giving me the data that I need. You know, data's king. So now that is all linked, I now know, you know, what my top sellers are, what my top size, you know, the sizes are, which I never had that
yeah.
before.
And the data's invaluable. Like, you'll learn about your customer profiles, their buying behaviours, your stock. And so you'll be able to make much better decisions in the future for the business. Yeah. A great recommendation.
Yeah. Highly recommend that.
Yeah. And lucky last, very briefly, just tell me, how are you managing your stress at the moment? We've had a stressful year with COVID. You've had these challenges with your business. Like, what's your go-to at the moment?
Yeah, so make sure I have, like, time out or that I have downtime. But also, yeah, I've joined a gym, so I go to the gym every morning to aqua aerobics.
Oh, have fun.
And then, yep, go to the oldies. but then I work from the cafe at the gym for a couple of hours. So, working from home, by myself.
A change of scenery.
Very mundane. Yeah. And, like, even, the girl at the cafe, she's like, we have your boardroom ready for you.
Oh, I love it. Maybe I should start doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But that's great, because I think that's why people need offices, is they need to have that small talk and that engagement with people. Like, we're social animals. That's so, having that laugh with her telling you about your boardroom, that changes your energy for the day.
100%.
So, and a change of scenery is always good because you think differently, you're more focused. So,
it's good. And it's, so after class, have a shower and, get changed at the gym, and then I just, work from the cafe for a bit.
I don't know how you do it, because when I do sport, I'm too relaxed afterwards, so I don't want to do anything.
maybe I'm not working hard enough.
Maybe I train too hard.
it's good. I like it, and having that routine.
That's wonderful. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Michelle. I think I've learned so much about your business, and you've definitely got some tales to tell, and I'm really excited to see, where the next year will go for motorsport in general, but also for Race Chicks.
Thank you.
It's very exciting, and I think you're doing an amazing thing, being an advocate for women in motorsport in particular, and you should be really proud of what you've achieved so far. So thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to our show today. Please share this with women you know who would benefit in hearing our stories and want the knowledge, inspiration and connection to build a business that they love online. If you love what you've heard, please rate this podcast with a 5 or leave a message in the comments below. Just like giving a review on a retailer's website, your feedback gives us credibility and helps more women discover us.